I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Amazing FBA UK. This is, I need to say, Amazing FBA UK. It's because we're thinking all about the UK today. We've got a man who is an expert in the UK itself, and I'm focusing more and more on that as my marketplace, i.e. people who are UK-based. But I know a lot of you Yanks are listening in as well. So if you're listening from the big state, welcome. And if you're listening from India, welcome to you as well. I know there's quite a few of you out there. Today, we are talking to an expert in prep, as in how to get your products ready before you head it off to Amazon. And surprisingly fiddly, like just about every area of Amazon business, it seems to me. So Greg Jones has been at this for 2 years solid, and I believe, and is certainly, he's at it solid every day. So he lives this world, lives, breathes, and eats FBA prep. So Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
First podcast interview. So thanks very much.
Yeah, you're trembling, you're biting your nails, and yeah, it's all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, none left.
You know, well, don't worry. As you can tell from my, you know, professional studio here, we're not worried about the professional setup so much as getting real answers from real people. And you certainly are, you know, one of those people. So tell me a little bit, Greg, about your background. First of all, do you sell on Amazon yourself?
I do. I've sold on Amazon for almost 2.5 years now.
Right. Okay. So quite a serious background. And is that how you came to be doing your prep service, or did you just do that already?
No, that's how I became or started FBA prep. I hated prepping the products, and I realized it takes a lot of time away from doing the bit that makes money, which is sourcing good products. The old adage of where there's pain, there's an opportunity. I set FBA prep up in September, almost 2 years ago, in September. So yeah, and gone from strength to strength.
Fantastic. So what was the actual motivation? So you've already mentioned that you were feeling the pain of it taking away from your time. What did you say you thought were the most valuable things? So sourcing and going to suppliers, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the money is. So I think that's where people should be spending most of their time.
And you just found that the prep was taking a crazy amount of your time up.
Yeah, yeah. Sticking labels on products is not the most time efficient for Amazon seller.
Tell me about it. Yeah, it's actually something I'd avoided because I started off selling into the USA, where, of course, if the product's 8,000 miles away from me in LA somewhere, then there's no physical possibility of me being stupid, right? But recently, I confessed that I ordered about 15 different products from AliExpress, and I have spent the last, 4 weeks trying to get them out the door with sticking labels on and hating my printer. And yes, so I'm totally feeling your pain. I just really wish I'd spoken to you about 2 months ago and you could have talked me out of this. But so tell me a bit more for the first question about prep is, why bother with it at all? Why not just send directly from China or your supplier to Amazon?
And yeah, a lot of people ask that when they make contact with us. I think, first of all, things happen to products on their way over from China, more so by air. If we get air products, because it's handled more, the boxes are thrown around and damage happens. The Chinese aren't always as good at prep as what we think they are.
Yeah.
When the stuff arrives, you know, you expect, the shipping cartons are damaged. Some of them are damaged in such an extent where there isn't a shipping carton.
Wow.
So others have been repackaged by DHL because the shipping carton is in such a bad way. So if the shipping carton itself is damaged, what condition is your product that you spent time and effort and money, of course, sourcing and getting perfect for Amazon, and then the couriers or freight forwarders, or the handlers rather, have destroyed them? So Amazon won't accept that. If you send, if something like that arrives at Amazon's door, they're just not going to handle that or process that. So either has to be removed or destroyed. Obviously, you don't want to destroy it, but then you might not be able to handle that sort of volume yourself, which is probably why you wanted to send it directly to Amazon in the first place.
Right. Okay. So let's unpick that, because you just put your finger on multiple points. So first of all, the Chinese can be so bad, or between the Chinese packing and the handling of it, it can be so bad that basically the cartons are just destroyed and presumably then a hell of a lot of the stuff inside it. And the second thing you've just pointed out, which I can totally vouch for, having been stupid enough after nearly 2 years of not doing it to try and do some prep myself, that, yeah, exactly. You don't want to be dealing with that in the first place. And like, I would almost at the moment be prepared to do sending stuff directly from the Chinese supplier to Amazon just so I don't have the pain of dealing with it myself. But of course, like you just pointed out, that's a really stupid idea. So if you're going to have to do prep, which it sounds like it really is an important thing, what sort of prep do you need to actually do for Amazon? What are the steps? Can you sort of talk us through the process?
Everything that arrives at Amazon needs a scannable barcode.
Right.
So, and I know your podcast is mainly about private label stuff, but if you've had your manufacturer put the EAN or UPC code on the box, that's fine. Amazon can scan that. If, like most products that come out of China, it's either a poly bag or a lovely white cardboard box that has no identification on, Amazon can't accept that. It's a big business, you know, they've got steps and processes in place and they're very inflexible. And maybe that's not a bad thing. Where a prep company has that flexibility, you know, they're a smaller business, they work with you to ensure that what's received, we can identify, label properly, package properly, and send on into Amazon.
It's a very good point about labeling that you just mentioned, because I ordered a bunch of products from AliExpress. And famously, this is one of the ways that people say on bigger podcasts than mine, should we just say, to not reference them by name, and say, oh, well, you know, if you want to get started with a low budget, go to AliExpress, order 50 units of X, Y, and Z, and get it shipped over and just send it in. Now, I recently did that kind of as an experiment, kind of because I was getting bored with how long it takes to private label stuff. And sure enough, a bunch of it turned up. Now, in the past, I've been lucky. I didn't realize I'd been lucky, but they all turned up with scannable barcodes. But half of these things, you're exactly right. The white box, the deadly white box with no markings on, turned up. That was like 100 products. And then three or four of them had no scannable boxes. When I say three or four, I mean three or four cartons worth of stuff. So I've experienced myself that even if that's not quite private label, but it's not just retail arbitrage, it's that in-between thing. Even though you're ordering en masse and you'd hope, and in my case, stupidly expected that they would prepare it, ain't the case. So I can totally back up what you're saying from recent painful experience here. So what's next in the process? So obviously you're going to have a scannable barcode. What about stuff that's sent in some crappy little plastic bag that won't even survive the process? Can you repackage things for people?
Yeah, and have to on a regular basis. The standard poly bag that the Chinese manufacturers use is quite brittle and too thin. So it's against Amazon packaging terms and services and their prep matrix. So it has to be sealed. It has to have an anti-suffocation warning label if the opening is more than 5.5 inches. And these aren't Chinese regulations. So unless you've asked for that or specified it, it isn't going to happen. Even if you have specified that the bag needs to be sealed, that doesn't always mean that's what's going to happen. We recently had for 600 stools, portable stools, you know, you just pop them up and you can sit on them, all in a poly bag. None of them were sealed. They were labeled, beautifully labeled by the manufacturer. So I had a perfectly scannable Amazon FN SKU label on. Yeah, we could scan that. Unfortunately, the bag wasn't permanently attached to the stool. So Amazon would not accept that. That would be an inbound failure.
Right. So basically, if you picked the stool up, it would have just fallen off, potentially, the bag itself.
Yeah, or some of them were actually loose in the box. So when we pulled them out, the stool wasn't actually in the bag. The identifier, being the scannable barcode, was no longer part of the product.
Yeah.
So, you know, those had to be resealed and they didn't have suffocation warning labels on either, which again would have been a problem with Amazon.
So what actually happens, I don't know if you've experienced this, but what actually happens if you send a product into Amazon, for example, that doesn't have warning labels on the plastic bags, even if they're the right size and sealed and all the rest of it?
You get an inbound shipping problem on your seller central. It pops up and says there's a problem with this shipping, which effectively is a black mark against you. They'll only allow so many before potentially, I guess, they'll stop you sending any more of that item in until you've acknowledged that you have made an error. And you've got no option of arguing that. It's you've made an error. So you've got no option, I'm assuming, going down more and more. If you do it regularly, then it takes Amazon time to sort it out. They will charge you. They will put those labels on, but they will charge you, which slows down the process of getting your products on sale. More so, you could potentially end up, I guess, suspended.
Right. So it's not a very smart thing to do for your reputation with Amazon to mess them about, apart from the delay. And there seem to be so many delays built in, but yeah, you don't want to add one yourself. I want to pick up on one point you made, which I think is really, really important, especially if you're new to Amazon, and quite a lot of people that are listeners that I interact with regularly, say in the Facebook group, are quite experienced, but a lot of people are very, very new to it. If the Chinese say something to you and you've written it down and you've agreed it and you've negotiated it, doesn't guarantee it's going to happen. It's not a highly regulated business environment. I just want to stress that, as you said yourself, you've really experienced that so much, right?
And recourse is difficult because they've got your money, you've got the product. Most of the time, the answer, in my experience, the answer is, we'll discount you on your next order. So that means you've got to order more with the potential risk of it being wrong again to get a discount for this lot that you've got that's wrong. So,
yeah, I have been there.
Don't expect a refund.
Yeah, I have been there with that exact scenario. I had multiple problems. I don't think it was, to be fair to the supplier, a shipping problem. Now, tell me what sort of things, obviously a lot of people now, especially if they've been listening to anything I say, I'm just always bang on about getting an inspection done in China because it's so important. I didn't do it on my first product. I ordered electronics. So those are two big no-nos and I get like an 11% defect rate, which is kind of to be expected if you're that dumb, right? The training I received at the time wasn't very good to China. But having said that, once it's been inspected in China, so let's assume even they've got the right poly bags, they've got the right labeling, they've sealed it, they've done everything you agreed with them because you've had it checked before it got packed in a ship or in an airplane. What problems can you find from the actual journey itself at the other end and what are the solutions that we need?
If it's in a poly bag, pretty much they're okay. The problems start with when you've had your lovely, colourful retail box made. They've been tightly packed into the shipping containers, shipping cartons, and then they're thrown around. By sea is a lot better because there's just less handling. You know, they go into the container, they're not moved around as much. Probably the most damage is done here when it arrives, when it's pulled out of the container, palletized, put on the back of a wagon. So sea is better. We do have a lot of sea palletized deliveries now. It's not palletized in the container. So the loose boxes put into a container because putting them on a pallet creates, uses too much space. So they try and get as much in a container as possibly can. Multiple shipments in one container if you're only bringing small numbers over. But we regularly see, we suggest and recommend our customers ask their supplier to send between 15 and 20% extra boxes, flat packed, within the shipping cartons, so that when we inspect the product at our end, we can swap out those boxes, damaged boxes, the ones that have been in the corners, the ones that have been on the side that have been hit by a forklift truck fork that's, gone into the side of it. One of those things only needs a glancing blow, but it makes a right mess of your box. Amazon won't have that either. That becomes unsellable.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very important point. Again, I can second from experience, having been quite maybe fractionally less foolish and done some prep myself at home, but of just one set of units. So it was very, very standardized. But I mean, it was like 500 units of one type of product. And yeah, it was pretty much exactly, in my case, it seems to hover very steady around 10% box damage, meaning that if I'd had 500 units shipped over with no extra boxes, I would have had 50 unsellable units, which would be a colossal waste for the sake of a bit of cardboard. So I think that's a very, very important tip there, that's not to be overlooked, because otherwise it's just colossally wasteful for the, what's the word for want of a nail, the battle was lost, something like that.
Yes, it's just time, isn't it? You've got lost products, it's sat on the side. You then have to go back to the manufacturer. Can you send me some more boxes? We've just recently had another one. Actually, I've had a notification today. It was worse than just the boxes. They were photo frames, decorated frames, packaged lovely, really, really nicely packaged. But the glass of the frame, there was 50 in the box, 50 in the shipment, 10 of them were broken.
Nasty. So,
and then the email correspondence that I've been included in, the manufacturer is going to send the replacement glass with their next order. So there's 10 of 50 sat there now, sat on a shelf in my warehouse, until they order again. So it's just, what could have been done to protect those? I don't know, maybe more polystyrene within the packaging, because they were really nicely packaged. You would not have expected anything to have happened to them. So, there's all that, there's that kind of consideration. But yeah, 15 to 20% is not an uncommon figure for us to find. Some more. We ask for 15 to 20% and quite often. Again, another recently, drinks bottles, you know, lovely drinks bottles in a retail box. There was 160 damaged. Damaged where I wouldn't, we base our damaged on, would I be happy to receive that in the post from Amazon as a buyer, personally as a buyer? And if we say no, that's not acceptable. I would complain. Well, then that's not acceptable for us to send it to Amazon on behalf of our customers.
Makes a lot of sense. And I think there's another important point to flag up here, which is Chinese supply people all over the world. And actually, the UK is a very small percentage of their market, obviously. But actually, the US used to be a big thing, but it's not now. So if they're sending it to, I don't know, Iran or Iraq or Russia, they're not necessarily going to be that worried about higher or lower quality packaging in Russia. But Amazon has trained a set of incredibly fussy buyers. So what your Chinese factory thinks is just a stupid fuss about nothing, your Amazon buyer thinks is the end of the world. Now, it's all a matter of perception, right? But I would just urge everyone to, you know, you will get bad reviews if your packaging is less than perfect. I mean, I've had that as well, even if the product was wonderful. So something else, I'm again urging you to take seriously.
And as we know, Amazon is all about the customer experience. So even as a seller, you go back to Amazon and go, oh, well, I've had, everything was packed lovely when it left China, but, you know, they're not bothered. It's all about the customer experience. So yeah, that's what we look at the product for, is if we're happy to receive it, then that's fine. But so we had to replace about 160, but we'd only got 100. So again, I have now 60 of these bottles sat in my warehouse, waiting for new boxes to arrive.
So the big tip there, I mean, even I need to learn from that. Even I sound like I'm so massively experienced, but even though I've done quite a lot of importing of certainly a lot of air freighted or air courier stuff, it looks like really that 10% of extra packaging that I put in, thinking I was being clever, it is really towing the line. So 20% is more realistic.
Yeah, I would. I mean, if you've got spare, that's great. You've got some spare, but if you haven't got enough, that's a headache.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, also, if you're spending, say, 20 cents per box, which is what I got for OEM, i.e. own design boxes, and your units cost you, you know, pound, £2, £3, or whatever, $5, something like that, then it's penny-wise, pound stupid to not have extra packaging. So that's an important point. So obviously, we need to bother with prep. You've convinced me, you convinced the listeners, you know. So why use a prep company? Why not just do it yourself, especially if you're starting off at home? Why go to the trouble? Or is there a point at which you say you should start with that? Or would you say to people, start with that from the beginning?
I think it depends on your circumstances. If you've got the space, if you've got the room to accept, you know, I think when you're getting samples and the smaller quantities, I think it is good for you to get them at home, to receive them, to feel them, see what they are, find out what the... And I think when you do the prep for maybe 100 or 150, you'll realise very quickly that you don't want to be doing the prep for 500 or 1,000. that'll happen. I guarantee you that will happen. Unless you've got some sadistic streak that you're happy doing that. And space is a major consideration, because to get... maybe 1,000 pieces, you know, you're probably looking at a pallet. Now, a pallet gets delivered off the back of a truck. You'd have to make sure that the truck has access down your road, has a tail lift, because I'm sure you won't have a forklift truck in the garage. and then somewhere to put it when it's been delivered on a drive. You know, the driver, the truck driver, is only going to deliver it to your road, to the driveway. We had a very panicked customer ring up. We had no contact with him, and he phoned up saying that his 2,000 piece order was about to dock into Southampton. His freight forwarder had told him that it was probably going to be two pallets, maybe three, just depending on height. And he wanted to know if we could help him and take the goods and prep them for him and send them on to Amazon. Obviously, yes, that's so. During talking to him and stuff, you know, why haven't you not thought of this in the earlier? He said, I just didn't realise they were going to be so big, such a big space. It also come to light that he lived in a two-bedroom flat on the something like the 16th floor of a high-rise building in London. He was never going to get two pallets. I'd be surprised if he'd got five boxes up there.
amazing lack of preparation in the world, isn't it? I mean, like, if you live in a high-rise flat anywhere, that's bad news. But as somebody who lives in London, like, even trying to park your car on the street without a parking warden stamping a 90-foot sign on it is impossible anyway. So,
so yeah, he was expecting to put two pallets worth of product on the probably on the lift, probably. I don't know. Needless to say, we helped him out, and he's been a repeat customer time and time again. So, yeah, space and preparation is, I think, a key.
I think that's so absolutely right. Now, I would just give my little sort of tale here. I've tried getting box. I've had probably about 800 units through the flat here, and we've got a 2-bed flat in London, which is probably, like, you know, worth £15 billion because it's London, but, you know, it's really small amount of space. Unfortunately, you know, you've got to live with that. And unfortunately, my partner's very tolerant, in fact, off to help, and she's actually quite practical and gets stuff done. Which is good. I like to sort of talk about getting things done, and every so often in a massive rush, I do things. So this is why I do the podcast. But having said that, that worked okay. But I had 15 different products in about one box worth of each from AliExpress recently. And I've already talked about how much of a nightmare it was, but it stayed in the corner of the flat for about a month. And my partner was okay with it. She's a bit more tolerant of mess than I am. It drove me personally nuts. If nothing else, the mental anguish of knowing you got a bunch of stuff that isn't shifted through the system is a total distraction. I swear it's put my business about a month behind for quarter four in terms of searching and for and sourcing and getting orders in for real products in real sensible quantities. So all I can say is, don't do this at home, folks. Literally, if you're going to be that dumb, send it to Greg and let him deal with it.
Yeah, time consideration. You know, we have a lot of customers who do this as a side. You know, a side gig, a bit of pocket money kind of thing, who've got full-time jobs, source the products in the evening, order it, deal with China, blah, 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 blah. They've got no time at all to be prepping because they're working. You know, they're working all day. So those are just the common sense reasons not to do it yourself and engage a prep business to help you.
Absolutely. So let's just run over the full range of stuff that you can actually do for people. So obviously check the cartons, which sounds like it's more crucial than I'd realized. I'm lucky enough, I haven't had any totally destroyed cartons yet, but it sounds like it happens. Obviously you're inspecting the boxes and the items. It sounds like you deal with the barcodes, FNSKU barcodes, which if you're new to Amazon is basically the scannable barcode that you need to put on a product to put it in Amazon. Let's not go any further with that. What other things can you do? Do you deal with the Amazon listings and do you do inbound shipping and get that sorted?
We don't do the Amazon listings. That's obviously part of your business. We can find someone and outsource and someone who can do that for you. The inbound shipping, we partner with a freight forwarder that I've been using for over 2 years. And with him, we offer a service where we can pick it up in China. Or wherever. It doesn't have to be China. Most people use China, but India, the US, wherever. So we'll pick it up in China. You negotiate FOB terms with your supplier. They deliver it to port. We pick it up and we take over from there. So then we'll arrange the air or sea customs clearance when it gets here to the UK, the road freight from the port it landed at to our warehouse. We'll do the prep or whatever is required, and then we'll organise it into the Amazon's warehouse, whichever warehouse that they select, just we have to send it to. So we can do it end to end. It takes away a huge amount of pressure and takes you and it's safe and secure.
Don't wow, scam. That's a pretty amazing thing to have, actually, because end to end really is one of those things that as a beginner I think you need it, and when you're further down the line you realize that it's the best use of your time to not get involved with stuff that other people are expert in and you're not really. So we're touching on freight now, which is a great area to get into. So obviously it's something that touches on your work rather than being your main focus, but obviously there's something you've experienced a lot of the problems with the other end of it. What would you say are the three biggest mistakes or so you found that sellers make with freight that you've come across in your work?
I think the story before regarding the guy who hadn't realised what he was going to do with it when it arrived.
Yeah, that's pretty major consideration, right? Yeah.
You know, have that forward plan. You know, make sure you know what's going to happen to it. I think one of the – there's currently – I'm not sure if it's currently or if it's always been there. There's a scam that's going around where the supplier offers you shipping terms. In my experience, this is what I've experienced myself, and a number of customers now, they offered FOB prices to the port in China and CIF prices to Felixstowe in the UK.
Now, you're talking slight sort of Greek to many people. So can you just explain the terms FOB and CIF for those who are not initiated into the dark arts of freight terms?
Okay. So FOB is free on board. So the Chinese will pay the expenses to get your goods from their factory to the port of departure. CIF is exactly the same, carriage, insurance and freight, to a UK port. So they've put it on a boat, they've exported it, put it on a boat, and it will arrive at the dockside in Felixstowe or Southampton, which are the two main ports that it comes into the UK. So from dockside, you then have to organise onward freight and customs clearance. Now, in my experience, I got the same price for FOB in China or CIF in the UK. Now, obviously, it's got to have got to the UK. So I thought, at first I thought, that's you know, it's part of the service. This is really nice. Having spoken to my freight forwarding partner and friend, he said, "Oh no, this is a scam." Because what they do is once you take up the CIF option, because obviously that's the most cost effective. It's the same price, but it's already here. The handlers in the UK have to pay the shipping charge. It's not free. It's been passed on to the UK agents to pay that charge, and they're not going to give it you free. So you then get charged for that freight by the UK guys. You also have to pay all your normal VAT, import duty, and custom clearance duty fees. And I've heard figures of £600 to £1,000 just to release your product, and they've got your product. And if you don't pay them, you don't get your product. They then start charging your storage fees in a bonded warehouse, etc., and the costs just start going up and up and up. One customer of mine, he decided, in his terms, to throw it into the water. There's some really nice designer chairs he was importing. I think they cost him $200 for four chairs, and they wanted £780 to release them in the UK.
Ow. So that's a really horrible scam. So that's certainly something you don't want to be a victim to. So what are the warning signs that that might be happening to you? And above all, what's the way you can prevent that?
The warning signs is the supplier will offer you terms that look remarkably good. And as the old adage says, if it looks too good to be true, it probably is. Go into it with warning bells already ringing. Ask for prices from other freight forwarders. There's plenty of them. Like I say, we can get prices from the guys we use, but you know, by all means, there's lots of them out there. Even if it's just to give you an indication of what costs might be, and if the Chinese guys stack up and it looks about right, brilliant. That's great. But if it's remarkably cheap, then at least you know where you stand and what sort of prices you've got to be adding on.
Excellent. Well, thank you. You may have just saved a hell of a lot of people listening a lot of grief down the line. So tell me a bit more about freight forwarders. So before we do that, actually, tell me about the working with a prep company, and then we'll come back to freight forwarders. Because obviously when you're working with people external to your business, you need to start structuring things in a slightly different way. So what would you say are the basic do's and don'ts of working with a prep company like yours? What do you need to give them? What do you need to not do?
I think the biggest thing with using a prep company is trust. Because at the end of the day, and I'm well aware of it, you're sending, on lots of occasions, it's a large investment, you know, thousands of pounds worth of product to somebody you don't know. You don't even know if they exist. as an entity, you know, they could just be just an email address and a website, and you end up sending your stuff to them. So make sure you're happy with the people, you know, engage with them, talk to them, ring them up, look for social proof. So make sure that I know it kind of sounds common sense, but sometimes common sense isn't as common as we expect it to be, is it? So make sure they're real, make sure they're who they are. And then we're an extension to your house. You know, we're a delivery address for you. You know, we're not importer on record. So we don't have any importing responsibility, financial responsibility for your goods. You do. We are just your delivery point. And, you know, you need to tell your supplier that. Because quite often product coming to us in my name, actually in my name. DHL, TNT, FedEx, whoever, then send me personally an invoice for the VAT and duty. I obviously send it on to the customer, but the invoice is in my name. So it then makes it difficult for you to claim that and put it into your accounts without going back to the freight forwarder. It doesn't happen. It always happens with couriers. So mainly on the smaller stuff, the 300 or 400 item stuff, but this can be thousands of pounds. So make sure that your supplier knows that you're the importer on record and that the financial responsibility for the duties is yours and not the delivery address. And that stands even if you're not in the country. If you're not UK-based, if you are US-based or whatever, we will be your delivery address, your name, your company name at our address. So the invoice will come to us. We'll forward that invoice on to you. We will pay your duty if it's been pre-agreed. What else do you need to do? Tell us it's coming.
Sounds basic, yeah.
That sounds ridiculous. But yeah, inform us that it's coming so that we can be aware of it. The worst thing possible is to receive 6 pallets on the back of a truck 8 o'clock in the morning and not know who the hell they are, who they're for. All they've got is, again, my name on them usually. I could have so much product, it'd be unbelievable.
Yeah, I was going to say you could become rich and then head off to China and set your own factory up.
Recently, I had to send out a mail blast to all my customers to find out whose is this kit, whose is it,
Insane. It's extraordinary, isn't it, that people will order not just, 50 quid, 100 quid's worth of product. You'd expect them to be a bit careless, but like 5,000 quid's worth of stuff and don't even think through the fact they live in a flat somewhere at the top of a high-rise flat story. It's quite amazing to me, but it sounds like from your experience that it happens all the time.
Yeah, and not even telling us it's coming in. So it literally coming my name to my company address with no paperwork or actually owned it. Yeah, incredible. But those are the things that happen every day. The life of prep company.
That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs, give 80% of the outputs. Which are the critical few for you? Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few. Then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.